Welcome back to Art Ladders, everyone. Armin and I are out of town installing an exhibit, so today we are revisiting our number one listened to podcast episode. Episode 21 from April 11, 2021 with UK artist Sally Hurst is the leader on our playlist. As an artist from across the pond, she brings a unique perspective and boundless energy to us here in the States. This conversation is definitely a winner. And if you are new to Art Ladders, we hope this episode will entice you to follow us and listen to more from our 69-episode catalog. Enjoy the conversation with Sally. Welcome to Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Merzman. This podcast is focused on interviews, features, and stories about art. It's for artists and art lovers. I'm Val. I'm the abstract artist in the group, joined by Armin, the realist. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our 21st episode of Art Ladders, The Creative Climb. We are so happy you're here with us. And in a bit, I'm going to be talking to artist and friend Sally Hurst. But first, I'd like to welcome Armin. Hey, Armin, good to see you.
Good to see you, too, without glasses for the first time in my life. So I feel like I'm forgetting something, but this is fantastic. And I'm excited about talking to Sally. I love her work. You know how much I love abstraction. And as a realist, without that love of abstraction, I wouldn't be a good realist. I think you have to understand abstract space and enjoy it to be a good realist. Although right now I'm between worlds.
Yes, you are. Sally Hurst, welcome to our podcast. We are thrilled to have you here. I want to just give the folks just in a nutshell, and these are kind of some words that you, how you describe yourself, but you're a painter, a printmaker, a tutor, a nomad. I love that. You're restless, you're curious, you're experimental, and you just are unrestrained and sometimes irreverent. Am I right?
Yeah, that's pretty it. Yeah. It took me a while to get that statement right. And when I showed it to my daughter, she said, yeah that's it.
Yes. Yeah. When sometimes, I read it, yeah.
Sometimes it gets me into trouble. I'm not very good at parameters and boundaries, but on the whole, it's fine.
That's me. That's why you're an artist.
That's why I'm an artist. Being an artist is the only way I feel I can manage myself. It's mm-hmm. where I feel at home. Mm-hmm. And I've made a hole that fits me.
Right.
Yes. You know, that whole square peg in a round hole thing. Mm-hmm. For me, it's I've made a hole that's my shape.
Perfect. Perfect. And that kind of ties in with your story and how you became interested in art and when you first had the glimmers, and it may have been very, very early on.
See, I it's so early on, Val, I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
The story, the family story, you're going to love this one because we're all of an age now. The family story, I'm the youngest of six. Both my parents were married before. And so I'm right at the bottom. I'm right down the bottom. And the oldest one was more than 30 years older than me. So quite a lot of us in a big spread. Mm-hmm. And so my mum was probably a bit tired by the time I came along, and she used to have naps in the afternoon. And the story goes, and I don't remember this, that I picked up a pen and I drew, while she was asleep on the sofa, I drew in all the lines on her face. And she was probably about 40 something then, and there'd been quite a few lines. She'd been through quite a bit. And she just got up and went out to pick up my sisters from school. didn't look in the mirror, covered in these black lines. So that was the kind of like, oh, okay. And it's almost like from that point, it was, this is my identity, not just as artist, but as someone who's going to do things that I probably shouldn't do.
Did your mother like the piece? drawing? Did your mother like the drawing?
I don't remember. I don't remember it happening. But all I know is it went down in the family history of something, one of the many things that Sally did. And then my father had a butcher shop, and my mum used to have to help out, and I'd be sat in the corner with those big sheets of butcher's paper, you know, newsprint. And I would just sit there all day filling up sheets and sheets and sheets of newsprint. That's what I did. That was my identity. That's mm-hmm. from, I don't remember being any different.
Where did you grow up, Sally?
Pardon?
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South London. And my dad had a butcher shop, and said I was the youngest of quite a tribe of us. We were quite feral. but I think we could then. I don't know about you guys. You went off on your bikes and you went home when you were hungry. That's kind of how life was. Yeah. It was tricky. There were some points where it wasn't the best of childhoods. I don't think I knew at the time, but I certainly missed a lot of school. I didn't finish my education then. I was the youngest. There were family issues, and it was quite feral, actually. But in a way, that's made me the person I am. Mm-hmm. Sure. I know what I need to do to manage myself. I've had to manage myself from a very early age, and find my way through life. So it's fine. It all turned out fine in the end.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad there was no internet when I grew up, because I hid away in my art, not in the internet, and so. Yeah. I think that was, you know, people can't imagine that today. But
no, and I think young people, I've taught young people, and they all have somewhere they have to escape to, whether that's art or books or music and the problem with the internet is they haven't made it. It's very external, and they're just participating. They're not participating within it. Mm-hmm. They're just looking at it. Mm-hmm. And that's a tricky one.
Yeah. Sure, I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, along that line, and you are now, when the pandemic started, you just grabbed it and you went online immediately. You had already been teaching online, right?
No. I've been I'd always been teaching.
Oh, yes.
I went from not going to school and leaving school with nothing to at 30 being at Cambridge University. So that's a story and a half.
Yes.
And then I was teaching. I taught in high schools and colleges for over 20 years, but always carried all the way through was being an artist all the way through.
Always.
But I'd taught photography and I'd taught some film, but I'd never sat this side of the camera and filmed myself. And then the pandemic hit, and we just got back from Morocco. We were in Spain, and I was going to be there to have an exhibition and show some work. And clearly it was becoming, my daughters were texting me, and one of them is quite nervous about the world, but the other one isn't at all. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, if she's worried, you know, there's something going on here. And I just turned around to John and said, we need to go home. We just need to go back to the UK. Mm-hmm. And we got the last flight out of Spain before they closed the borders and found ourselves at home. And I had, I always teach in the UK during the summer workshops. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to cancel these. And they pay for my, I don't sell a huge amount of art. The workshops pay for my studio, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if I haven't got money coming in on a regular basis, how am I going to pay the rent on my studio?
Right.
But I thought, well, I'm going to have to cancel. So I started canceling, and one of my students got in touch and she said, oh, I was really looking forward to doing that. Could you do it online? And this was late on a Sunday, and I think I'd had a couple of glasses of wine, and I just said on social media, I'm going to teach online. And the next day I had, what I didn't know then is that the the biggest art store in the UK, which is Jackson's, who I had just done a blog post for, which was fab. They put me up on one of the 10 best things to do in lockdown.
Oh my goodness.
After that single the next day I had 300 emails.
Oh,
and it was like, that's wonderful.
And it was like, I can't not do this.
Right. You were in it to win it.
Studio, oh. We're in lockdown. So I had a room about 8 foot by 10 foot. And I had a laptop that within a week I had to buy a new one because it just couldn't cope. And I bought a microphone and I went on YouTube. And how do you do this? And I did 2 lessons a week, 1 hour lessons a week. I started, you'll love this. Armin, you'll love this. I started doing them live, but I got banned by YouTube for inappropriate content.
Oh, really? That should make you even more popular.
I know. I have no idea what I said or what I did or what. Anyway, so I thought, I can't do these live. So I videoed them and then I put them out as if they were live. You know, like you guys with the podcast. Sure. It was like the next day. And I didn't edit. It was just like me talking for an hour and showing materials and chatting about art and engaging and trying to get people making stuff. And then I'd put it out the next day. And within a week, I had 3,500 followers, people all over the world. And I just rolled with it. And it took my mind off what was happening in the world, guys. That's all I thought about was making these films twice a week for three or four months. And it was just like, I'm just stuck in this room videoing. Yes.
But it's a lot of work.
It saved my life and it saved my sanity.
Uh-huh. It's a lot of work too, isn't it?
A lot of work.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
Work
and then I got better at it. The early ones are hilarious. I got better at filming and talking and stopping and putting things over and not swearing and all those sensible things. And I got better at it. And then I stopped and I took a month out and thought, right, what do I do now? And so I then decided to put it together as a business, you know, mm-hmm. to film them properly, get them edited, edit them properly, put them up on a teaching platform. And people, mm-hmm. that's what I do. And people pay to do my courses. And it's been life-changing on so many levels. It's been the people I've met and the people I talk to all over the world, it's just been fabulous, actually. Absolutely fabulous. Really enjoying it. But it's been hard work. I feel like I've uploaded my head to 400 hours of video.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But the other side of this, where you've done it now, you're a pro at it for sure.
Yeah.
And it's here to stay. This lifelong learning is here to stay. So you are set in a wonderful position for all of us.
I just love it. And for me, it's very hard to not keep filming, coming up with new ideas. I need to, I made a point, like you said, about making work with lockdown, Armin, and how difficult that is. I decided at that point, I'm not going to make any work for me for a year. And I didn't, because I knew that if I started a project, I'd be torn in I'd everything would just explode and I wouldn't be able to cope with it. So the priority was get all this stuff videoed, get it all out, get it all organized, get it done. And then I can start making work again. Mm-hmm. And then
was that a difficult transition?
It was difficult because I spent so many years making. I mean, I was still making art because I was teaching it, but I wasn't I wasn't doing the stuff that I have in my studio now. I wasn't making stuff for exhibitions. Within all of that, I was doing my master's degree. So I was kind of doing stuff that was online. But I wasn't letting myself get too involved in a project. I needed to get, this was the project. This was the creative project, you know. I had to learn how to edit, learn how to get lighting right, filming, syncing, videoing it, using the cameras. I had to get all that right. And in the knowledge that once I'd uploaded my head, I could talk to myself again.
Right. And it's also an expensive, artists, Whoops, go ahead, Armin.
It's also an expensive deal. You know, when this all started, and I was using Photoshop for 20 years, and I was very comfortable with the computer. But all of a sudden, there's audio, and there's cameras, and, you know, buying things from Amazon, sending them right back, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And buying the wrong cameras and the wrong microphones and
exactly
and trying to buy stuff cheap on eBay. And
right.
Yeah. You know, but I got there. It's fine. Yeah. And learning all about it and trying to work out, you know, why am I getting a hiss? Well, it's because I've got the wrong hub and I've got all these things all plugged in. And it's like,
I know.
Yeah, but it's fine. It was good. It was a sharp learning curve, but I'm always keen to learn. Mm-hmm. And I have what I when I in teaching there's a theorist I don't know what you call her a psychologist called Carol Dweck, and I'm not sure if she's American or European, but she talks about having a growth mindset, you know, not having a fixed mindset, not having the mindset you think, oh, I couldn't do that. For her, it's very much the idea that you might not be able to do that now, but it's not a no. It's just a not yet, you know? So the whole idea of a growth mindset that we don't stop learning, that we carry on, and there's no limit to what our brains can absorb and how we can change and adapt. Mm-hmm. You don't hit an age where it all just stops. It just doesn't happen, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you have a fixed mindset, it happens. You know? If that's your approach, if that's your attitude, that I've hit X number of years, and so I can't possibly do that. Obviously, we have physical constraints. There's things I can't do now that I could do 30 years ago. But in terms of mental mindset, no, there's no limit. There's no end to that. You can, as long as you're well, you can carry on. So I've always had this idea of a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helps. And it certainly has helped over the last couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that growth mindset, that is fascinating, because the more seasoned we are, the more our growth has even more potential. So that is very, very hopeful for everyone. And the other thing I noticed with artists at the very beginning of the pandemic, it's the artist who made intentional decisions, like your decision to just dig in and learn this, put your own art making a little bit on the back burner, even though, as you said, when you're teaching, you're creating art. But other artists, I know of an artist, Jay Handy, we had him on not long ago, and he decided he would not watch television through the pandemic and pursued a master's degree during that time. These are the artists that took this opportunity, like Armin mentioned, of the, what is it, like 2 years that we could zero in on something. And boy, it really... For you, it made a huge difference. And for all the artists who did make those intentional decisions, it really pushed them forward.
And it wasn't easy. I think it's a lot of people who felt, oh, you know, we have a pandemic and we got a lockdown. I'm going to write the novel that's in me. I'm going to make this body of work, and froze, you know?
Yes. Like, yes.
Because I mean, for me, I had no choice. I felt I had no choice. I'd set this ball rolling. I just had to go with it, you know. I wasn't gonna say no. I was gonna roll with it. I wasn't gonna pull back on that, because I think there was a lot of people out there pushing me on and encouraging me, which was fabulous, absolutely fabulous. But I think if you were an artist who didn't have that outside world and were thinking, I'm gonna write this book or whatever it is you're gonna do, you could see why some people just ended up making very small work. Mm-hmm. You know, or simply didn't work because of the worry of it and this pressure you put yourself on when you say, I'm going to do that is just huge, you know, and you have to account for those people too. It hasn't been easy for many people to make the work that they thought they'd be able to make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We put ourselves under huge pressure, don't we?
Yes, we do. And you know, that may have been the key, where you throw it out there on Facebook, hey, I'm going to teach online. And then you're accountable. You know, all these people are watching you and you're accountable. Where if you say, hey, I'm going to do 8, you know, huge paintings, just kind of, you know, there's the accountability. Where is that? You know, so I think that accountability key, which you did.
Yeah. And I think those artists that managed to do that without without raising their head out of the door, you know, all credit to them, you know, that is sometimes you just don't want to do it. And when life's throwing things at you like it was, and you're seeing the kind of stuff on the news that we were seeing, you just don't, you don't want to make art. It just seems frivolous or just a waste of time, you know? But it has been really, what's been amazing about it is the people, the emails I've had for people who were stuck, and I mean really stuck. There was a woman from Kent who was literally stuck in Australia. She'd gone to Australia, wasn't allowed out of Australia. She was stuck there. And she picked up on YouTube because I have a Kent, a South London Kent accent. Oh. And she wasn't an artist, but she would have me on while she was cooking her dinner, just chatting. You know, she just thought, I know that voice. That's a voice that I was brought up with, you know. Uh-huh. And it's those things, that idea that we could reach out to people and engage with people and encourage people just to get on with life when they're literally stuck miles from anywhere and away from family and friends in a world that they were just seemed to be collapsing around their ears. That was heartwarming and humbling.
Oh, that's a great story. I love that. Yeah. You know, Armin and I, you know, we started this podcast, but a lot of it had to do with starting to listen to, and I know you'll know this podcast, Art Juice. You may have even been a guest on there. I know.
Okay. I haven't been a guest on that. I was a guest with Louise Fletcher. Early when we both did Nick Wilton's course around the same time. And so she set up some stuff and she interviewed me on that. That's hilarious because I that was 2018 and I've transitioned to gray hair since then. So it's very funny. her and Alice Sheridan is an amazing artist, a highly experienced and really interesting artist. And when I was years ago now, this is about 2017, when I had seen Nick Wilton's course online. And I knew through another friend who you may know, Karen Stamper, who has been, again, teaches online, amazing friend. Her and I are doing a collaboration at the moment, which is just hilarious. It's just fabulous. Karen was going to do CVP and I said, shall we do this? And she knew that Alice Sheridan had done it, and she then went on to be one of Nick's coaches. I got in touch with Alice Sheridan and I said, I'm not sure. I was strapped for cash. I mean, like, it is expensive course. And it was like, I'm not sure that I can afford to do this. And one thing Alice said to me, she said that she felt physically sick at the thought of not having done it. And it was like, okay, then maybe I should do this. And it was a transformative course. And I recommend anyone to dip into his world. And he does a lot of
things. Sally, why don't you talk a little bit about that? Our listeners might not know about Nick.
He's Nick Wilton, American artist. He runs a thing called a Creative Visionary Program. And it's an annual four-year deep dive aspects of creativity. It's not an easy course. I highly recommend it. And after that, I went on and did my master's online. And I have to say, I got more value out of Nick's.
Wow. I follow
Nick quite a bit. Would.
Yeah. Really interesting. But no, so Alice, in that time, Alice and Louise have set up their podcast.
That's right.
And that goes really well. People really like that. So, but again, I think they like our voices as much as anything else.
It's very comforting on this side of the ocean. It's very comforting to hear your voice.
It's very odd because Alice, I'm sure you won't be saying, Alice has a very proper voice.
Yes.
Very good English. And Louise is from Yorkshire. So she has a Yorkshire accent. I'm the grubby South Londoner.
You know? And you have the South London. I love it all. Yeah. But yes, it's nice. Like you were saying, folks listening to you for the voices. It's very, yeah. It's where art becomes therapy. And it is, art is yeah. such a.
And I think the years of teaching, I taught for many years, it means I can deliver and I can break down. You know, yeah. I can break down a task and deliver it clearly and mm-hmm. concisely so that people can get it. You mm-hmm. know? And that's a skill that comes from, you can't, you know, those skills and being an artist for so many years, those kind mm-hmm. of skills are, they're not, you can't acquire them quickly.
Right.
You know,
I bought one of your courses, the Explorations in Calligraphy. And what's so cool about it is, I can go back to it anytime I want.
You can go back to it anytime.
Which yeah. I do. And it's a wonderful, wonderful situation where I see the videos of you. Oh, you have the outlines. I mean, there's so much material. You really deliver on all of that. I love it.
And I decided quite early on, I know some people will say you've got the course for 6 months or a year. Or I just simply couldn't be bothered, Val. It was just like, I'll just have it, you know, just take it.
Just give it away. Just get it out there in the world.
Sally, talk a little bit about your work and how you got into the type of abstract work you're doing and collage. Chincolet, I don't know if you do that.
It has changed enormously, but I had a solo show about 7 or 8 years ago, and I was worried about the fact that I felt it had changed from semi-realistic to very abstract. Mm-hmm. But when I put the whole show together, the threads were there, you know, there was common threads that went all the way through. So it hasn't always been abstract. It's always been semi-abstract. I've never been super realist. I've always, and it's always been about very much about architecture and architectural mm-hmm. spaces. So mm-hmm. in the past, I would maybe have buildings and I would do interesting things within the confines of the architectural space that was a single viewpoint. You know, mm-hmm. I would play around with, well, what can I do with that bit of wall? Or what can I do with that shadow? And play around with things. And I became increasingly interested in those aspects of it and less in the single viewpoint architectural aspects, okay? Mm-hmm. Less in terms of the visual, more in terms of the how can I play and explore this? So it's become increasingly abstract over the last few years, but it's still very much based on reality. So I still go out and take lots of photographs. I still do lots of drawing. I still explore all of the visual aspects of what I'm doing. And then I just grab the bits that I want to take a bit further. And I do that in lots of ways, either literally grabbing, like zooming in with a small viewfinder on a small area and abstracting and taking away things I find interesting, or chopping up and combining different pieces. But the root is always, they're always from the same place. They're always from the sketchbooks. They're always from a realistic, you know, a point of view, really. And then it's about exploring different media. And I love playing with media. So I do printmaking and I do painting and I paint on my prints and I cut up my paintings and I'll put the painting through the press and, you know, everything just gets reworked and this kind of cross-pollination mm-hmm. Of different techniques and different media. And the prominent thing is, well, what if, you know?
Yeah.
What if I did that? So curiosity is 100%. What if I did that? What happened?
Right, okay. Right.
That really drives the whole thing. And sometimes I worry that I've got too much media on the go. But I remember listening to Pam Gohi online, and I really like her approach and respect what she's doing. And she said that she stopped worrying about it because it's all hers. It doesn't matter if it's all different media. It still comes from me. Mm-hmm. And there will be threads that follow it through. And there are. So that's kind of where it is.
I'm a realist. I, I, sh-
I'm almost saying that I'm a realist in an embarrassing kind of way, but oh my God, I still do realism. But the way you're working, it seems to be a sense of discovery. As a realist, let's say, I'm going to paint an orange. I already know what it's going to look like. It's going to be an orange. Yeah. And there's no sense of discovery except I think
I've hit a point where I knew I could do that. And there weren't so many what if moments.
No, exactly.
And so it was like, well, you know, what if I chop that up or cut that up or approach it from a different angle or zoom in on it or
I think that is so exciting. You know,
yeah, it makes it exciting. Mm-hmm. And I did one where I like mark making, although actually I realized fairly recently, that there's not a lot of marks in my work, but I don't do gestural brush strokes. It just doesn't, right. And Val doesn't either. You know, it's just not something that we do. But I do that in my sketchbooks, and I will do that when I'm drawing. But then I just chop those drawings up. And so for example, I did a project based on an abandoned building in Spain, and I had large bits of paper, like 8 foot wide pieces of paper. And I had a screen in my studio showing photographs on a slide of the building and the objects in the building and the textures of the building. And I just drew on this piece of paper for about 5 or 6 hours, over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And then I chopped up the whole painting into 20 centimeter squares.
Wow.
And those chop ups aim the starting point for a series of abstract painting. But the root, you know, they come from those objects and that building, mm-hmm. and that experience of the drawing and the continual drawing. Yeah. So
as I was researching your work today, I came across lots of cardboard, and I was looking at the beautiful textures in there. And even if you're a painter and you're trompe l'oeil, photorealist, whatever you want to call it, you'll never get that beautiful reality of just a piece of cardboard. Yeah. And that is such an amazing view. I mean, you're showing how beauty is in everyday things. And if you arrange it right, and you then all of a sudden it becomes something else. And as a realist, it's just an illusion. Yours is reality.
Yeah, they're physically... I mean, my current project is for my master's. I did a whole project on lockdown. Obviously, I was in the middle of lockdown, and I did a whole series of work where I was printing from cardboard boxes, mm-hmm. Tetra Pak printing, all the boxes that Amazon deliver. You know, it's just like you're in lockdown, and oh my God, did we have cardboard? You know, just masses of cardboard. So it's all about the idea of being in lockdown and liminal space. But that's developed since then. I'm now printing from old book covers. I'm using the book cover as the plate, and I'm putting things on it, and I'm inking it, and I'm running it through the press. Mm-hmm. So they have the traces. These are book covers that are from books that are 60, 70 years old. And they have the traces of scratches and torn bits. And they're books that have fallen apart before anybody asks, you know, oh my God, she's taking books apart. Now these books have died. They've finished. You know, I'm giving them the last bit of life, really. Right. But the textures within those are just fabulous. And how the printing process reveals those textures, mm-hmm. okay, is really the key in terms mm-hmm. of that. And then those prints are becoming the basis for encaustic paintings, actually. They're coming the baseline, and they're carrying on into something else. So this idea of, grabbing the everyday, grabbing the abandoned, the lost, the something that someone would just walk past or throw away, and raising the status of it. Mm-hmm. It becomes a piece of artwork.
Yes. And the book cover series, I just love it has a very historical feel to it for me.
Yeah.
Because it is like working with an antique and painting on top of it. So, and I just want to remind everybody listening to follow you on Instagram, because you have a visually beautiful Instagram feed, and the books are on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hate Facebook. we have to use it. And it's
we
like
have Instagram, to use it. Yes.
Instagram is such a visual platform.
Oh, I love Instagram.
You know, yeah. And you can just sit and scroll. And I really like Pinterest. And Pinterest seems to be at the back shelf for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But Pinterest is, you can go down a rabbit hole and spend many hours on Pinterest.
Every night I spend an hour, you know.
I like that too. This kind of, so it's, there's no politics. There's too many adverts on Pinterest.
They put a lot of, but
it's very much, you know, there's less politics. It's more visual. It's just about images and finding and reaching out to other people that it links with what you're doing.
Yes.
You know, yeah. There's an artist I'm following at the moment called JFK Turner. He's a young chap. I think he lives in south of England. And his aesthetic is just a delight. He's making art from things he finds.
Oh, let's check that out.
You just check him out, JFK Turner. They're just fabulous.
I'm going to put him in our show notes along with some of these other.
Oh, you really should. We've started following each other, and there's another artist I'm following called Daryl Burnett.
Okay.
I don't know where he's from. I think he might be Canadian, but he's made a small thing from cardboard. Huh. Every day during lockdown.
Oh, interesting.
And they are, and it's about loss, and they commemorate people who have gone, who have passed. And so he's building up this collection of very small, like, you know, 3 or 4 inches wide. But there's something poignant and aesthetically beautiful about the textures and the process of this everyday signing in and commemorating, really. Looking at artists online can be a bit of a time eater, but the benefits we get from that. I studied art history at university, so looking at art for me is as important as making it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's super. Now you and I met in Miami at that Golden Gathering. And I remember going to Art Basel and we were kind of running around our different paths, but I remember I would run into you at different areas of that huge fair. And you were, first time I met you, you impressed me. Your, again, curiosity and your enthusiasm while you were there was just very inspirational for me. And tell me a little bit about your thoughts as you went through that crazy Art Basel.
So, just amazing. And I've never been anywhere. We don't have that scale of stuff here in the UK. We have art fairs, but you don't get an art fair where you're standing in front of a Jasper Johns, you know.
Yes.
one of my all-time heroes. And I got the girl to take a photograph of me next to this Jasper Johns. And then she must have thought, this woman's mad. But it was just this, and everything just seemed so accessible. Everything just seemed so unlike being in a museum.
Yes.
You know, museums can be intimidating and you know, they're difficult places to negotiate, and they're very quiet, and yet you've got all this stuff by major artists and fabulous work, and everyone's just wandering around drinking wine and having a good time, and it blew me away. Absolutely blew me away. It was an amazing experience, and the whole time I was there, and I got on my own. So after all of that, and we met, I went off to Key West and had a little trip there, and hired a condo, and it was just like, it was fabulous, and to meet all you guys too. But no, Art Basel, it was just great, and all the how they'd done all those little hotels, and they turned the whole place in Miami into an art fair, and those amazing Art Deco.
Oh,
love my architecture. Yes. So the amazing hotels, and they've taken them over and
taken them over
shows, taken over in different shows. And it was just, Yeah, no, I've not been to like that anything before, and certainly haven't since.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was a fun, it was mind-boggling, definitely great trip.
Yeah.
And you travel quite, well, you were traveling quite a bit, and you had a studio in Spain?
Yeah, me and my husband, from his job, he worked in the telecoms industry, and he wanted a bit of a project. So we bought a 300-year-old ruin in southern Spain, in Andalusia, near Granada. And we spent 15 years, or he did most of it, I have to say, renovating it. And it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But we've sold it, which is sad. Mm-hmm. A mixture of politics because of Brexit. I'm limited now to how many days I can spend in Spain. That's the rule of it. I'm the same limit as you have, right? Exactly the same as you guys. which meant our 6 months in Spain can't happen. So and then the pandemic as well.
And then
so it's a mixture of things. And family here, and it was just like, well, maybe we'll let this go. We'll let that. We did it, you know. We achieved it. We did it. It was fabulous. But I had we had a lovely house, and the ground floor was my studio.
Oh, okay.
That was good. We did that for quite a few years, and it was. Uh-huh. We still will. We do love Spain. We have lots of friends there. So the intention is still to spend large chunks of time there, but we have to actually count our days, because if you go over time, then you're fined. And you can't go back for so many years and all these restrictions. And at one point we seriously thought, should we take Spanish residency? We lay in bed, and it was one of those, you know, you lie in bed and all the pros and the cons, and you think, shall we, and in the end we decided no, we'll relocate back to the UK and build our lives up here. So I now have a fabulous new studio in the UK, and I just it's three times the size of my apartment. Which is kind of how it should be, you know?
It's how it should be. Makes sense to me, Armin. I don't take note of this.
Yeah, well, sure.
And it also means my apartment is now free of all my stuff.
Oh, so true. Oh, the clutter.
Nice. That's really nice.
Uh-huh. Is your studio part of your homes?
No, it's 3 minutes to walk away. It's fine.
Ah, okay.
I live in a converted 19th century brewery. That's where my apartment is. And just around the corner, because I'm in a city in the UK, just around the corner, I've rented this whole building. It was cheap. It's not in the best street, you know. It's like no one really comes down here. So commercially, it wasn't particularly viable, but for me it's fabulous.
Wow. You
know, I didn't want neat and tidy and bossy walls. I wanted tatty, just wanted space.
Right.
Here we are. It's space. And it's eaten all my stuff to the point where I've been here a year now and I probably need to have a bit of a tidy up.
Hey, and I've seen photos of your studio. How many printing presses do you have in there?
I've got two major printing presses, and I've got five die cut machines.
Oh, wow.
Which you've seen on the course.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And if anyone's thinking about doing calligraphy, go get yourself a die cut machine, because they're fine. They're absolutely fine. They do. People are a bit snobby about equipment, aren't they? With art.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Yeah, a die cut machine will give you a damn good print. Get the pressure right and you're good to go. So I've got a handful of those because I used to teach. I used to use them for workshops.
Sure.
But they're just sitting in the corner now. But no, I'm hankering after a new press. I would really like a bigger press, and I would really like an electric press.
Ah, yes.
Because my shoulders, going back to age, my shoulders they're feeling the strain. And I'd like to be able to just press a button and it goes. But actually what I now do, I just hire my daughter.
Oh, there you go.
My daughter Millie will turn the wheel. That's fine. So it's worth having kids for that alone.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I got to give my kids the help too.
Kids are good for that.
Okay.
Your collaboration with Karen, tell me about that. That's happening now, right?
Karen and I go back decades. We both taught in Cambridge, and she teaches online. And when I first started teaching online, she was such a help. Her and Jane Davis and other people that I reached out to for advice. Fabulous. Just the advice they gave me was just, I can't thank them enough. But Karen and I go back many years, and she's been teaching online way before COVID. She'd put online courses up. So that was really good. And then she posted something on her Instagram where she'd stuck these bits of cardboard together. Okay. And I was like, oh. And I just said, can I put that through my press? Can I? And so she posted it to me. And I don't know how many months ago that is now. And I put it through my press, and then I sent back the prints, and she sends me something else, and I cut it up, and then we'll paint on it, and then I'll print it again, and it goes backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And basically, there is no rules. People keep saying, is there any rules? So no, the rule is it fits in an A3 envelope. That's it.
The A3 envelope.
We've got to be able to post it. And so I've sent back to her literally this morning. I sent back because I was in Spain for a month, so it kind of went on hold. But as soon as I got back, I picked up her delivery and I roll with it. And it's just people are amazed how we have. There's no preciousness, you know. Mm. She'll send me something absolutely beautiful, and I will cut it up, or I will dunk it in a box of a tub of ink. Or I will tear it up and I'll run it through my press. And she does the same, all right? There's no precious. These things are just paper and the paint, and they're just stuff. What's important is the process and the going for it and the doing it and the delight of getting this envelope. And it's like it's Christmas, you know? What have I got today? Yeah, and I think there's quite a few people who have carried. They're taking on the challenge, and they're doing.
They're starting.
And it's so rewarding because I find I'll do things with her work that even I wouldn't dare necessarily do with mine. Mm-hmm. This simply doesn't matter. It's not important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's been a delight, and it's been hilarious. They've really. Yeah, it's been good.
Oh, it's been fun to follow it on Instagram really again. Good. And that A3 envelope, is that about, I'm going to relate it
oh,
to.
Oh, that's about, what's that in inches?
Like 9 by 12?
Yeah, about 9 by 12.
9 by 12 inches. It kind of looked that scale on blind.
I'm trying to think. I'm not good at inches. I'm looking around my students if I can find something that's like it. I think it might even be bigger than that.
It could be a 16 by 20 almost.
It's 30 by 40 centimeters. So yeah,
okay. Listeners, you can do the math.
You need someone, get on your phone and Google.
Get on your converter.
A3 converter.
I love it.
I mean it's a good size. It's a standard kind of big sketchbook size, really.
Yeah.
And it's anything bigger than that is difficult to post.
Sure.
So it has to fit in that. But the envelope is taking on its own life.
I've noticed it is.
And my postman is loving it. He'll knock on the door and say, I've got
the art. Here's the art.
And we're writing on the envelope and we get finding interesting tape to put on the envelope. And it's just, it's taken on it. I don't know how it's going to end. I think it'll probably be lost one day. You know, it'll just get lost
in the mail.
and that'll be the end of it. But I'm filming, I think she is as well. I'm filming everything I do. I'm photographing everything I do before it goes off. Mm-hmm. So at some point I'll put like a blog post together.
Sure.
So that you can see the each stage of each piece of paper.
And how
it's developed through. But people are horrified. People were when I did the thing last this week where I dunked the whole thing in ink. Yeah. I had a woman email me and say, no, why did you do it? I loved it before.
So great.
Yeah, no, it's fine. No, she's great. She does the most amazing concertina sketchbook online course.
Yes.
She is the queen of concertina sketchbooks. Mm. And again, like me, been making art for decades, and it comes through in the teaching, you know, Val. Yes. I think when you've made art that long and you put on that armory of resource and ideas and approaches, it really comes out in the work. Mm-hmm. She's good. I haven't seen her for ages.
Yes. And you mentioned Jane Davis. Jane Davies has
the same. Oh, exactly. Yes.
Wonderful. They're both going in the show notes right now.
Jane is just, she's just, the chickens climbing over the chickens and
the music.
I mean, I took myself off on a residency years ago now, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do because it was on the coast in Cornwall.
Ooh.
And it was like, I really wanted to go, and you have to apply, and I got this space and it was lovely. And I got there and it was like, I felt so out of my, I'm a city girl, you know, I felt so out of my comfort zone. It was like, I don't know what to make. And so I just went on YouTube and I did a couple of Jane Davis's playing around with black ink or something. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah.
And it just warmed me up. It just got me going, you know. And then the whole project actually ended up I got really involved in the geology.
On the geology, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't about the sea and the sky and all those romantic landscape things. It was about the geology and the shapes and the textures in the geology. And that was fine. But Jane, it really helped to have this kind of like, what would Jane do? You know,
how would she dive into this? What would she do? And
I love all her stripes she was doing recently.
Yes.
And she's doing these quilts where she's
sticking. Oh, the quilts, yes.
She's just great and such a genuine, warm. And what I didn't realize until I met her in Miami, how tiny she is.
She is tiny. Yes, I was with a training group for Golden again.
Yeah.
Got to know her a little better. And you mentioned Cornwall. You hit a nerve with us. Armin, tell her our plans for Cornwall.
Yeah, it's like going to another country.
Oh.
And you know, UK small, you need to do. Yeah. And there's an artist that I follow, and him and I have been in touch, a guy called David Mankin.
Oh, sure.
And he
does great stuff.
Amazing stuff. And it's that, and he's had a book recently. And again, it's that approach that he has. And I use him on my abstract course to direct students to him. Mm-hmm. Say, go and watch that video, because what you see is him going out and sketching and photographing and noticing and witnessing, and that all feeds into his head. So when he's in the studio, it all comes out again.
Okay.
But there are intentions there. And I think sometimes when people are starting off painting and then really enjoying their painting, they feel there's something missing, and often it's there's not an intention. They're not following a line of inquiry. There's not that seed of an idea that needs to follow through.
Mm-hmm.
The shops are closing here. It's 5 o'clock. Shutters are going down. So yeah, no, he's a really interesting man.
He is. I do have his book. That was Christmas present, I believe, wasn't it, Armin?
Yeah, it's good. I bought myself a small David Mankin. I have a little David Mankin.
Oh, good for you.
He shows in a gallery. It was an exhibition in a gallery that I also show in. So it's like I've gone there to pick some stuff up, and it was on the wall, and I thought,
I'm going to buy that too. David Mankin.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's lovely. And again, I tend to buy art that I simply wouldn't make. I don't make that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make that gestural, you know, expressive stuff. I tend not to do that. And it's lovely. It's nice. It's nice to see. But he's really interesting.
Yeah.
And Cornwall is another world.
We're looking forward to going there next year.
Really need to. So when are you guys coming over to the UK?
It would be probably next fall.
23 in the fall.
So are you going to do a European tour, or is it what's the plan?
Well, you know, I'm from Germany. I was born in Germany. And moved here when I was 7 to the States. And so I'd like to go see relatives and go back to Germany. But, you know, I haven't discovered the, you know, Europe. You know, I'd like to go to Spain. I've never been there, and Italy and things like that. I spent time in Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands, and the UK. You know, I'm fascinated with the UK at the moment. And I think that's my number one destination. So hopefully next year we can go down there.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Maybe we could have a spot of tea there, Sally.
Definitely. Yeah. Tea and cake.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that, Sally. Tea and cake. I love it. Now, so we've kind of gone a big circle here with ideas, and your intentional approach for artists is such a wonderful words of wisdom for artists starting and continuing. Do you have any other words of advice before we close for artists?
I often find myself, people are very concerned about making a product, making a nice thing. And that's like 10% of it, you know? I mean, I know I'm surrounding now about finishing off these nice things to go in an exhibition. But that's such a small part of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And the journey is the collecting and the gathering and the exploring, looking at artists, the curiosity. It might not end up, when people are often disappointed that they don't end up with a thing. But you end up with a lot more. It might not be a physical thing, but you end up with more than that's worth. So people get a bit bogged down with making nice things, and then what goes with that is they get a little bit bogged down with ideas around audience. And increasingly, I find myself having artists will come to me who are experienced artists and successful artists. And I do a bit of online mentoring. And what they want to do is to break free and be looser and freer and more, you know, more abstract or whatever. And they are worried that what people think, it makes me so sad because like, oh, well, I'd really love to do that, but people would, you know, or people know me for making this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, well, do they really matter? You know, and it's just like, is that what we're on the planet for? To please other people all the time? So trying to get people to have the courage to make work that they're not known for. And certainly the successful artists find that harder, obviously. You know, they've established themselves. And it can be difficult to throw work out there that is very different to what you're used to making. But if you don't,
I'm experiencing that right now a lot.
Yeah, but if you don't do it, Armin...
I'm known for realistic graphite drawing, and now I'm going in a different direction. It is, you know, if you've been doing something for 40 years and you go in these different areas, although I always think of my drawings as starting with the abstract composition and drawing things that nobody else would ever think of drawing, but still, it's an exciting time. But if I'm not nervous, I don't think I create good art. If I'm comfortable.
I think we need to be, you know, we don't want to be comfortable. There's no room for comfortable. I remember going to a Jackson Pollock exhibition in London years and years ago now. It was amazing. And I went with a fellow teacher who wasn't an art teacher. She'd just come along to manage the group, to help me manage the group. And she looked at all these Pollocks and she just said, well, they'd make lovely, lovely, lovely textile. And also on the same day, she said to me, it must be so nice being an artist because it must be so relaxing.
At times, yes.
I don't know if that's ever in my vocabulary when you're making art is relaxing.
Oh. I think if it was, I'd worry. You know, if I felt... The point is, and I think one of the problems I have is that the point I've done it and I know how to do it, I'm bored so quickly that I don't want to do it again. Mm-hmm. So I jump from one thing to another. But they do all tie together in the end.
You're very experimental, you know, in the different types of printing methods that are going together and physically and all that. And so that seems very rewarding as an artist.
Yeah. Pushing the door all the time. Because I think the alternative is boredom, you know, and boredom is just God. I mean, the people I know a portrait painter who is a very respected portrait painter, has work in the National Portrait Gallery here in the UK. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's going to connect with me with her and who she is. She hates what she does.
Hates
it. She is so bored. Yeah.
I did the same thing. I did portraits for a living for 3 years in Chicago, and I thought, I'm going to quit art. This is so miserable. I'd rather work at a grocery store than this stuff. Yeah. So yeah. I stopped doing that.
Yeah. Being bored, worrying about your audience.
Yes.
That needs to go. I mean, that amazing book by Elizabeth Gilbert. Art and Fear, you know, she describes, I'm paraphrasing it, but she says, we're going to have fear. You know, you're always going to be scared of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But fear needs to learn to sit on the back seat, and it's not allowed to touch the radio.
Don't come out.
So yeah, that, you know, you're there, but shut up.
Yes.
Just let me get on. Let me get on with the work.
Love it. So much.
She's good.
Yeah. To share with all our listeners, Sally, this has been so much fun. So good to see you. And I can't wait until we see you maybe in 2023.
Definitely. Yeah.
That sounds really like a plan.
I was talking to Elise Wagner. You know Elise Wagner?
Oh, yes.
She's coming over in 2023.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I think we have a meeting happening. She's looking to come over to teach some encaustic calligraphy workshops here.
Wonderful. Oh, yes. We both love Elise's work. So that's a good combo. I can see you two together.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. We share ideas, and we have a like mind.
That's so true. So true. So Armin, any final thoughts that you want to ask Sally before we let her go?
I was excited researching your work and how much how moved I was by it. And anytime we interview somebody, a little piece of that gets into my soul forward. So that's wonderful. I'm so glad you adapted to the COVID thing and you moved people through it. Without COVID, you wouldn't be in this exact place.
It's been fabulous. I really like it. I mean, my abstract course starts again in a couple of weeks' time, and they're all excited. And, you know, and it's just been a way of reaching people that I would never normally reach out to. The audience would be too limited here. But it's great. I really like it.
And along that line, Sally, why don't you kind of review with our listeners where they can find to sign up for your classes from anywhere in the world? And where they find you?
Yeah, I mean, I have a website, sallyhurst.co.uk. It's Hurst with an I. And that has lists of my work, and it has lists of all the workshops. I'm quite prominent on Instagram, and that's Sally Hurst Artist. Uh-huh. And on Facebook, I'm Sally Hurst Artist and Tutor. And I'm also Sally Hurst Artist and Tutor on YouTube. There's quite a few freebie YouTube stuff. When I have an idea, I just whack it out on YouTube, and that's quite nice. Mm-hmm. But you can always email me. Anyone can email me. I do like chatting. So sally@sallyhurst.co.uk is my email. I think I've covered all the boundaries, actually.
I think you did. And of course, I'm going to put them out there in black and white.
And I really appreciate this opportunity, you know.
Sally Hurst, thank you so much for sharing your talents and your conversation with us today. Thank you to our sponsor, Golden Apple Studio and Residency. The residencies provide dedicated time and space in which visual artists and writers may pursue their work in a beautiful setting located about an hour north of Bar Harbor, Maine, on the remote and rugged shore of Ripley Cove. Shelley and Greg Stevens' commitment to inviting artists to flourish at their amazing property is well known by the artists who have attended the residencies for over 14 years. Looking ahead to summer of 2025 and 2026, I encourage you to consider gifting yourself with your time to flourish. Learn more at goldenapplestudio.com and email director and working artist Shelley Stevens with your questions and scheduling inquiries at snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. That's snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. Thank you, Shelley and Greg. Thank you for listening. You can find our past and future episodes at anchor.fm, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Mersman. Special thanks to our producer, Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media.
And check out our websites, valerieallenart.com, arminmersman.com. Stay creative, stay curious, and we'll see you next time.